Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, January 22, 2018. The Committee to Protect Journalists says the media is under threat in Sudan.
All the journalists are Sudanese journalists. Some, like those who were arrested on January 16, were mainly working for the local newspapers. It wasn't until January 17 that the government decided to split a little bit more.
And South Sudan's first vice president calls for peace in Jonglei State.
This is the first message from President Kiir that he should be peaceful so that the government can do its work. If there is a person fighting for you, why don't you sleep in your heart? Do your farm, go after your cattle.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. While news of the arrest of several journalists in Sudan, including two from international news outlets, has sparked swift condemnation, the Committee to Protect Journalists says the arrests are part of an ongoing trend of Sudanese authorities intimidating the press. Sherif Mansour is the Middle East and North Africa Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists. He says Sudanese government officials have been harassing the press over the last few years. Mansour says the government has retaliated against the media by shutting down the internet, detaining journalists, and on some occasions even beating journalists. He tells Ayen Bior, lately there has been stepped up government orders to confiscate newspapers.
Most recently, the most few months, we've seen much more frequent confiscation orders coming from the security apparatus that for the first time included many newspapers and included not just a temporary one-day suspension and confiscation of the newspaper, but more than a week or so. And the government has even started legislation that would give security apparatus control on confiscation, removing any confusion in the law that this direct censorship is permissible.
Now, I understand that one of the reporters that was arrested was a Reuters correspondent. AFP also had a correspondent that was arrested. Do we know anything else about the other journalists who were taken into custody?
All the journalists are Sudanese journalists. Some, like those who were arrested on January 16, were mainly working for local newspapers. And it wasn't until January 17 that the government decided to split a little bit more and detain journalists who work with foreign outlets and news organizations. And that shows how censorship works. They push the limit. They try to make an example of journalists if that red line was crossed. And this is a tactic that the Sudanese government have seen worked over and over again, including and primarily in similar incidents where the government wants to quash any protests or any coverage of protests against that show public dissent, including on economic issues like what happened in Egypt. Sudan sees Egypt has, over the last few years, waged a tactical censorship campaign that managed to, for the most part, get away with by silencing all journalists, especially those who are covering protests, and receiving little to no pressure from the international community about what they were doing.
I understand that CPJ has contacted Sudan's National Intelligence and Security Service for comment. Have you heard back from them?
Not to this day. Our concern is not just the immediate release, but also the safety of those journalists. It has happened in the past that the journalists who would be detained by security personnel would be tortured, would be pressured, and we want to make sure that the journalists, if they were in custody, there are reports that they're being released, will receive the medical care and their legal rights and have access to their lawyer and families. I think what's happening in Sudan is a telling precedent that in many ways shows how many countries in the region are realizing the very low cost of exercising repression against the press. And that's a bad sign, not just for Sudan, for the rest of the region, because journalists are the ones who are paying the price for this indifference by the international community about what happens.
That was Sherif Mansour, the Middle East and North Africa coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists, speaking to Ayen Bior from Washington yesterday. President Salva Kiir's spokesman denies Mr. Kiir is in South Africa this week to ask officials to continue detaining rebel leader Riek Machar, who went to South Africa in 2016 for medical checkup. SPLM-IO supporters say the former first vice president has been held in South Africa under house arrest for several months. Presidential spokesman Ateny Wek-Ateny tells VOA's James Batty Kiir is not in South Africa to discuss Machar's release. Ateny claims South Sudanese want Machar kept out of South Sudan because he is a warmonger.
The decision to keep Riek Machar in South Africa was not a decision of the government of South Sudan. It was a decision of the region itself, the IGAD. So if Riek Machar was to be allowed to stay in South Sudan, he would be continue making war in South Sudan because Riek Machar became synonymous with fighting. So it is a decision of the IGAD leaders, not the South Sudan. And that was not the reason, you know, for the president to travel to South Africa. I know Sudan Tribune can create anything because he's now has become like a mouthpiece for the opposition. So that's not true.
We have asked you or other government officials that it was your desire, your request. That's why Mr. Riek Machar is in South Africa. He claims, or his supporters claim, that he's being held there against his will.
Well, it is the intention of every South Sudanese that Riek Machar should be kept away because Riek Machar, you know, only make wars and he cannot make peace. So this is the wish of every South Sudanese that Riek Machar should not be allowed to come back to South Sudan at any time soon because they want peace. You know, and it's better that the government deal with the SPLM-IO that is willing to peace to South Sudan instead of someone who brings more wars.
But Mr. Riek Machar has been in South Africa now for almost a year, I would say, and there has been no peace in South Sudan. In fact, there's been claims and counterclaims of violation of the most recent cessation of hostilities agreement that your government signed with the rebels. So you cannot blame the lack of peace on Riek Machar.
No, but he is still ordering whoever that is still loyal to him to make sure that they continue to fight. When the cessation of hostilities was signed, the moment, you know, it was signed, the rebels belonging to Riek Machar started to violate the agreement before even it comes to effect. So Riek Machar is the one who is still ordering, you know, forces that are loyal to him to continue to fight. So this is what he does. Nobody actually doesn't know that.
So is it the belief of your government that Riek Machar should completely be cut out of the peace process?
You know, Riek Machar doesn't have any better option other than war. Riek Machar was asked last time to condemn violence, you know, renounce violence, and make sure that, you know, he's a peacemaker instead of just determining to fight on.
That's presidential spokesman Ateny Wek-Ateny speaking with VOA's James Batty from Juba. South Sudan's first vice president, Aban Denga, is calling on the residents of Jonglei State to coexist peacefully with communities in neighboring states. Guy says he believes intermarriages among the Nuer, Murule, Anyuak, and Dinka will prevent more deadly cattle raids and child abduction. For VOA News, Denga Deng reports from Bor.
For the first 2 weeks, Vice President Guy has been touring five states which were cut out of former Jonglei State to try to convene the residents in the area to end deadly violence between different ethnic communities. Speaking at a rally on Saturday, Guy urged the leaders in Boma, Jonglei and Akobo to improve security in their areas by arresting suspected cattle raiders. Ayun Jol, a resident of Bor Town who attended Guy's rally on Saturday, says he welcomes Guy's call for peace in the Jonglei region.
If people are committed themselves to go for development, insecurity so matters a lot. Like now, I myself, I'm now trying to go to my community and then look for a way that to earn money or the way that I can get money, like to go and cultivate. My worry is people will still attack me and will development continue? So my target now, I'm for development, I'm for peace, but insecurity so matters a lot.
Another Botang resident, Abraham Aleo Anyet, says he too welcomes Guy call for peaceful coexistence, but worries about what he calls the government empty promises.
Much you say to citizen that I will do this to you, I will show you the law, and tomorrow he repeat the same thing and you don't implement what you promise, the much it become worse. I'm worried if government never take the tough measures against us as a civilian or criminal of our communities, it will get worse and worse and worse, and the word will remain in media and in the ear of the citizen.
Resident Peter Madit says the lack of peace has affected businesses in Jonglei. Madit says guys should work hard to bring peace and normalcy to the region.
Every year we are just suffering about child abduction or cattle raiding. I need peace here in Jonglei State. From Boma or Jonglei State to be together, we will share our business together. Then we will make compensation together.
Madit says the national government should not allow civilians to continue killing themselves in the region. Guy says the national government is tired of continued intercommunal fighting caused by child abduction and cattle raiding in Jonglei. He says President Kiir wants peace in Jonglei State.
There is challenge number one.
This is the first message from President Kiir that you should be peaceful so that the government can do its work. If there is a person fighting for you, why don't you sleep in your hut? Do your farm, go after your cattle and fishing. We say that your youth should not go to Murule and remain here so that government solve the problem of these criminals, because it's the government work. We are starting this year to deal with these criminals.
Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguirre says forming a joint integrated police force can help reduce child abduction and cattle raiding in the region.
Your Excellency, as a governor of Jonglei State, I want to see a change coming to Jonglei this year, 2018. Otherwise, there is no need for a governor if there is no change in the area.
Last week, the SPLM former detainees accused the first vice president of violating the cessation of hostilities agreement signed by all stakeholders at the IGAD high-level forum in the Ethiopian capital last month. The spokesperson of the former detainees, Kosti Manive, says Guy's movement through Jonglei area with a huge number of troops is a violation of the ceasefire deal signed in Addis. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
The chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, JMAC, released a statement today demanding all parties to the South Sudan conflict to respect and comply with the terms of the agreement on the cessation of hostilities, protection of civilians and humanitarian access, signed on December 21st last year. The statement calls on all sides in the conflict to fulfill their obligations to the International Ceasefire Monitoring Body, CITISAM. Festus Mohai said CITISAM teams are the direct representatives of IGAD and the wider international community on the ground in South Sudan, and the parties to the conflict must respect the ceasefire monitor. South Sudan's Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elio Lomuro threatened on Friday to kick CITESAM out of South Sudan. Mohai said CITESAM has and will continue to monitor the permanent ceasefire and the most recent cessation of hostility agreement to the best of its ability and with total impartiality. Lomuro told this program that CITESAM's reports on the ceasefire violations are, quote, fake and biased. JMAC's statement warned the warring parties to avoid threats towards ceasefire monitors. Mohai reminded the various stakeholders to the peace agreement to read Article 4, Paragraph 3 of the Cessation of Hostility Agreement, which says the parties shall not carry out unwarranted verbal attacks against CITESAM, JMAC, and the UN. Lomuro told South Sudan in Focus on Friday that IGAD should ask the UN's Regional Protection Force to take over CITESAM's work in South Sudan. The SPLM-IO loyal to Riek Machar also accused CITESAM of turning a blind eye to the violations committed by South Sudan's first Vice President Taban Dengai, who visited several areas in South Sudan in the past 2 weeks along with a huge number of troops. Mohai said it is regrettable that public statements continue to be made, which have the effect of undermining public acceptance of and confidence in regional and international peacekeeping efforts. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new leader is elected in the Anglican Church in South Sudan. Find out who this leader is.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you own a solar-powered device? If so, what is it?
One. I would wish to have one because I need it. Because it's easy and it's not costly.
I have a torch. I have it at home. Plus that solar two panels that are serving our house in the village. Compared to the electricity is more expensive than solar.
Yes, we have one. We have a lighter. It's the one we use at night. We charge it daytime. It's really good.
I own one. It's a lamp that I normally charge it on the sun and use it when the lights go off. I don't use it often.
I don't have any because mostly the things I get to buy, they are electricity powered or I get batteries.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Anglicans in South Sudan have welcomed the election of a new archbishop to replace retired Archbishop Daniel Deng Bull. The Archbishop-elect, Justin Bade Arama of Maridi Diocese, was voted by the House of Bishops and will be the fifth head of the Anglican Church in South Sudan. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from the capital, Juba.
I am here declaring that the next primate is Justin Bade Arama.
That is Reverend Peter Munde, Dean of the Anglican Church in South Sudan, declaring Bishop Bade as the newly elected Archbishop of the Anglican Church in South Sudan. The election of the 54-year-old Bishop of Maridi Diocese was welcomed by pastors in the Episcopal Church of South Sudan. Reverend Hilary Lasuba Tambo hails from Onduruba Diocese. Reverend Tambo says he hopes the new head of the Anglican Church in South Sudan will bring about change.
We are very happy to receive him, and we are very happy even to see whatsoever he will do for us, especially the diocese who are already being displaced.
Reverend Tambo says he expects Archbishop Bade to convince Christians to turn away from impulses that encourage ethnic clashes. Reverend Francis Philip Ladu of Juba Diocese could not hide his feelings over the election of the new Archbishop.
So I'm glad, I'm happy, I'm not worried about what has taken place and who has won the election, but I'm so happy that it was done in a transparent way.
Badi and Bishop Abraham Yell of Awil Diocese competed for the office of the Archbishop. 159 delegates from 52 dioceses voted Saturday, and Badi won with 8 votes against Yell, who received 79 votes. Before his election, Badi served as Bishop of Meridi Diocese for the last 17 years. Archbishop Paul Yogusuk of the Anglican Internal Province of Central Equatoria says the new head of the Anglican Church is a hard-working leader.
When he was consecrated, as he was called as a baby bishop, he came in as a young bishop, and he has been there throughout serving God. I visited the Diocese of Meridi, and it is one of the developed dioceses. And he has done a lot in education, and especially in discipleship and evangelism. He is a hard-working bishop, and I think he comes with a lot of experience into this position.
Yogusuk says the Archbishop-elect will be a voice for the voiceless.
You can see a country has been ruined, people are dying, rape, and name them all. So Christians are looking for a leader that he will speak on behalf of the people. A leader that will speak to the government the truth. This is the expectation.
Archbishop-elect Badi says his leadership will focus on strengthening the values of Christianity across South Sudan.
The legacy I would want to leave behind is that the effort my predecessors have done in expanding the church, I would want to see the church united, Christians demonstrate real Christian values. Because now, when we say we are Christians, the world doubts us. Those who are Christians cannot hate themselves, kill themselves, destroy themselves.
Retiring Archbishop Daniel Dengbol, who served for 10 years as head of the Anglican Church in South Sudan, challenged South Sudanese to learn from the church's transparent elections. He urged his successor to continue the work of uniting the people across the country.
From today, Justin is the next primate of the Anglican Church in South Sudan. Very soon, the dean of the province is going to send out the time and when is the enthronement is going to be done. And it is going to be done here in Juba. So I congratulate both of them. They have shown maturity that our church is matured enough, and now God will bless them.
Archbishop-elect Badi will serve as the primate of the Anglican Church in South Sudan for the next 10 years. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Veteran politicians in South Sudan say South Sudanese need to revisit the past and learn from former leaders in order to build the country. Former government officials say recruitment of public servants, management of public funds, and the prompt delivery of basic services is now at stake. Manyang David Mayar has the story for VOA from Juba.
South Sudanese politicians, including Vice President James Waniga, took part in an event honoring Abdelalier, former Vice President of Sudan, and former first president of the then Southern Sudan High Executive Council. The occasion was organized by Alier's Bor community. Bonamelo Almadut, who has ties to the controversial Jiang Council of Elders, was one of the veteran politicians who spoke at the event. He says South Sudanese leaders have to learn from Alier's leadership style.
With Southern Sudan being where it is, if we are sincere with one another and we are honest with one another, we can very easily reconstruct South Sudan on the basis of the agenda that Abdelalier had laid down in the many years he has been a leader of South Sudan.
President Kiir's economic advisor, Agritisa Sabuni, who also worked in Alier's administration back in 1972, says strong public laws and unity was the agenda of Alier's administration.
He made sure that public service laws, regulations, and procedures were properly followed. In the recruitment and promotion of public servants, the right man and the right woman
was put in the right place. He ensured that the face of the public service was made up of the 64 faces of South Sudan. There was room for the Makaraka, for the Bongo, for the Golo, for the Kachipo, for the Jie, for the Bele, for the Lubo, for the Lokoya, for the Keliko, for the Tenet, and for everybody else. There was room in the house built by Abel Elia.
President Salva Kiir appointed Elia as the co-chair of the National Dialogue in April last year. Jimmy Wongo worked in the Ministry of Agriculture in 1972. Wongo says large infrastructure projects were carried out during Alier's administration.
Major projects including smallholder coffee farming, cattle and sheep ranching, these are things now forgotten. A wheel rice scheme, Upper Talanga Tea Project, Katiren Gilo Forestry Project, Zara Agro Industrial Project were initiated, started and were functional during that.
Another veteran diplomat, Ambassador Francis Madingding, says the current leaders need to revisit the past in order to perform well in the future.
And there was a time when prominent names of South Sudan came up and you wouldn't think which tribe are they from. They were Southern Sudanese leaders. We need to revisit that part of our history and derive a legacy and inspiration from what was done. So that it is not just an aspiration of what could be done, but what in fact was done and therefore could be done again.
Vice President James Wanyika acknowledged the importance of following in the footsteps of the former leaders like Abel Alier.
From this statesman, from this icon and leaders of the type of Abel, I think it is a must for us to go to all these backgrounds. It will equip us with the right road ahead. And I want to finalize by saying that our government will leave no stone unturned to give all the necessary support to Sheikh Abel and his contemporaries.
Many officials who attended the occasion to honor Abel Alier challenged the government to recognize South Sudan's former leaders, including Joseph Lago, among others. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song "A Wife is a Blessing" by Isaka Number One.
Benu sahili lakini mahaja sahili ya kwanie Bi aino haja sakit lakini mahaja sakit ya kwani Fi haja benu sahili lakini mahaja sahili ya kwani Bi aino haja sahili lakini mahaja sahili ya kwanie Marane hadia min ala Wife is a blessing from God Almighty. Kanita mendumara binadita lo ilong. Kanita jibumara bijibuleta ilong. That's why I say
blessing,
blessing. Mara de hadia min rabuna.
Blessing.
A wife is a blessing from God Almighty.
Blessing.
Blessing. Mara de hadia min Allah.
Blessing.
Blessing. A wife is a blessing from God Almighty.
We have been listening to Isaka Number One with his song, A Wife is a Blessing. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Would like to hear what you think about this show. You can reach us at southsudan@voanews.com. or you can also check us out on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Fimara lagara wa indu shihaka bigeni fimaktab kaman fimara laru business kaman bi